Possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Warden Martin Subaru, Champaign's exclusive Subaru dealer, on Route 45 in Savoy. Online at wardenmartin.com. The phone number is 217-352-8910 for Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Before we get to our topic this afternoon, computers and you, we're going to take a moment to ask you listening out there to become a member of the Friends of WILL. This is the WILL Fall Membership Campaign, and our goal this week is to begin raising the funds to pay for programs like the Afternoon Magazine. We are a listener-supported radio station, and we count on you to help us do that. We have a dollar goal for this drive of $160,000 today. By the end of the day, we hope to be at $90,000. Thanks to those folks who have joined us this week. Thank you ever so much. Joining me in the studio is Jack Brighton, and he is our Director of Internet Operations. So appropriate to have you in before we talk with Greg Klein this afternoon.
I always love listening to Greg Klein. He knows so much about what's going on in technology and keeps on top of things. So that's really great to have him on the show every month or so.
Yeah. This is a program, one of the problem-solving, troubleshooting kind of programs that we do on the Afternoon Magazine and Focus 580, whether it's talk to a doctor or talk to a technology person like Greg or Peter Kimball. This is a program we do on the third Thursday of the month. We call it Computers and You. And if you rely, if listeners are out there and they say, I got to tune in for Greg, I got a problem, or I want to know something, I know I can depend on WILL, the Afternoon Magazine. Somebody will be there on the third Thursday of the month to answer my questions about technology. And it's such a rapidly changing field, and WILL is there, thanks to you, with the web.
Well, a lot of people around here are pretty good with technology, as you might expect from a, you know, media organization. But we do the best we can to make the website useful for folks. We put archives of all the interviews, all the Afternoon Magazine interviews that you hear on the air are on the website. And you can listen to those in real audio, or you can download MP3 files of those same interviews. And we also do podcasts. So a lot of people are now doing this thing called podcasting, where they just simply using iTunes or some other, you know, application like that. They subscribe to the podcast feed, which simply is very simple to do through the directory. You can just click a couple of buttons and subscribe to the Afternoon Magazine or Focus 580 or Media Matters or some of the other shows that we offer. And then those shows will be downloaded to your computer every day. And then you can put them on your MP3 player. It could be an iPod or it could be anything else that plays MP3s.
And the subscription fee is?
Zero. It's a free subscription, and we want to keep it that way, just like we do free broadcasting over the air. It's a public service. Our mission is to serve the informational needs of a democracy and to give people all the news and cultural information they need to be healthy citizens. And so that's our attitude. The problem with that model is it doesn't make much money for the organization, you know, adopting the model. So that means we have to come to you, the listener, every once in a while and say, hey, would you please make a voluntary contribution? And that's what we're about this week during our fall pledge drive. And we hope that you will respond. And there are a couple of ways that you can do that. One is you can call our pledge line, which is 244-9455. Right now, we have volunteers who are anxiously awaiting AFMAG listeners. And so 244-9455 gets you to the pledge line where you can make a pledge, a contribution, either a credit card, immediate donation to the station, or, you can just fill out the pledge form. We'll send you a pledge packet and give you a choice of thank you gifts, etc. Or you can go to our website. Actually, if you're not having computer problems too serious that you need Greg Klein's help, you can use your computer to make a pledge by simply going on your browser to willpledge.org. That takes you directly to our pledge form online.
WILLpledge.org. Will pledge.
Right.
And we hope they will.
You bet.
Right. Okay, let's go quickly to Martha Deal in Pledge Central. Martha, you got folks there ready to take calls, right?
We do, and I would like to thank Ann Martell for her donation this year, and she's one of the lucky people who's gotten the $10 gift certificate courtesy of Jupiter's Pizza. I understand we have seven people pledged, so that still leaves us with 18 of those $10 gift certificates, and I want to encourage people to call 217-244-9455, and thanks to everyone who has given.
And thanks to Jupiter's Pizza, because they want to encourage our listeners to support News and Talk Radio with this incentive. So if you haven't made a pledge to WILL Radio this week, well, today is the day to call. 217-244-9455. Make your pledge now. This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's Computers and You Day today here on the Afternoon Magazine. This is a topic we take up once a month on the third Thursday of the month. Our guest this month, Greg Klein, science and technology reporter at the News Gazette. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions about computers. The number to call? 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, you can call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Greg, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Celeste. It's good to be here.
Good to see you. We've already got a couple of listeners lined up and ready to talk with you.
All
so
right.
Let's go first to the toll-free line. Line 4, where are you calling from?
El Paso.
Okay.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Not Texas, I take it.
No.
McLean County.
Woodford County.
Woodford County. Oh.
North of McLean County.
Okay.
I have a question which may be of interest to a lot of your listeners. I have a number of account numbers and passwords that are on my computer, such as, you know, bank account numbers and such, login IDs and passwords, and if I had to take my computer into a repair shop, but it was still working, how could I wipe out all that identification on there before it went into a shop?
All right. So primarily, I think what you're concerned about is
security.
Security, obviously, but the passwords and sign-on names that are stored in your web browser, right?
Correct.
Because we're not talking about that you have these just sitting there in an open text file that anybody can go in and look at, right?
No, but when I go into accounts, my computer remembers
right.
some of
right.
these.
So you'll find, if you go, do you use Internet Explorer?
Yes, it's a later version. It's on, it's one of the later versions, correct.
Okay, if you go into Tools, and then you go to Internet Options,
mm-hmm.
You'll see various tabs there. There's General,
mm-hmm.
Security, and so on, right? And if you look through those settings, you'll find that there are places where you can delete cookies, delete files, change your settings, right?
I've done that.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does that take out the password?
So, no, I don't think that'll do that for you.
No.
So what you want to do is, I believe it's under security. I'm trying to, well, I'm a little frozen here. So, oh, here we go.
I'm scrolling away, trying to put his finger on the answer, so to speak.
Well, of course, you always hope that you take your machine to a reputable repairman, but
right.
this age
right.
is identity theft and all, so many
yeah.
things going on.
It's a good thing to think about, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can't find that right in front of me here this quickly. For example, but let me tell you, there's a setting in Internet Explorer where you can do that. For example, if you went into if you were using Firefox, for example, in Firefox, it's if you go under Tools and Privacy, There's a place there that lets you clear saved passwords, right?
Mm-hmm.
It says saved passwords and clear. And you'll find if you look around in the settings for Internet Explorer, there's the same kind of setting in Internet Explorer. It's just hidden a lot better, as Microsoft tends to do, than it is in the open source browser or Firefox, which, by the way, I recommend over Internet Explorer.
Okay.
At, you could get it for free at www.mozilla, that's mozilla.com. But that's what you want to do. And Google it. You know, Google something like Clear Passwords, Internet Explorer. I bet you'll find the directions for it quite quickly. And that's all you need to do. So it's the same thing as deleting your cookies or emptying your temporary cache, you know, that temporarily stores the Internet files you view.
Correct.
And all it does is take those out. Okay?
Okay.
Now, here's the disadvantage, right? You're going to have to then, you know, go through all that again. Your computer's no longer going to just put those in there for you, so you'll have to enter them all again.
I'd rather be safe than sorry,
yeah.
though, yeah. Because that brings up, you mentioned that brings up another thing that's I think I've heard becoming more prevalent, and that's these spyware programs that record your keystrokes. And I was just reading again something about that the other day, and of course they always recommend don't use a public computer to. You know, for personal information like bank accounts and such. But
you don't want to do that.
If there's a hidden program, you know, that's recording keystrokes, why they could hack into it that way. So, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Next, we talk with a listener on line one. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, both of you.
Hi.
Listen, I got some questions, so I'll try and hurry so I don't take up the time. I'm visually impaired. I was wondering, do you know of a good speech software, maybe Windows, maybe what do you call it, JAWS, or I can't think of the other one.
All right. Sir, when you say you're visually impaired, are you completely blind, or
yes.
Can you, so you can't see at all then?
That's right.
And you want software that will speak to you.
Basically, yeah.
And what kind of things do you want it to, what kind of things would you want it to read to you?
Well, I was wondering if you could read mail, and also I might want to go to a website, you know, maybe go to a certain website or a certain radio station
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
So you want to, essentially then, you want a text reader.
That's right.
It's gonna read the text to you.
That's right. In other words, if it says go to ..
Mm-hmm.
website and
mm-hmm.
then read the stuff that comes on the screen.
Well, Dragon, naturally speaking, is one of the ones that I think would come to mind right off the top of my head. And there are others, I think, that are more specialized than that. You know, at the U of I, in the campus disability office here, they do a lot of testing and research related to this kind of thing. And I suspect if you contacted them, they'd be able to make better suggestions than I could.
I see. Well, that's a good idea.
Now, let me also say this. Are you using Windows?
Well, I haven't got it yet. I'm in the process of getting one,
okay.
But I'll get me one.
Well, both Windows and the Macintosh operating system from Apple, they have some accessibility features like this built in, but they're not. They're probably not as capable as you'd be looking for.
Okay, there's another question I wanted before I run out of time. I keep hearing about this Internet 2 and how much faster it is than the original.
Yeah.
So why do only just college students have it? Why doesn't the public have it? I understand you can download. Well, it used to take a long time to download a movie.
Right.
On the regular Internet, now you can download one in 4 or 5 minutes or something like that.
Well, because that's kind of a specialized network that's been set up to link big research institutions that are moving around large sets of data.
Well, I think eventually we'll get it.
Yes, probably so.
Yeah, and just one more.
We got Internet 1, and it started out as a, as, you know, essentially a military and research institution network.
Yeah. Do you think the day will come when we'll see our computers become our ATMs?
At home?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's going to happen tomorrow or anything.
No,
I'm
thinking 10, 15 years down the road.
Yeah, we'll be doing more and more stuff like that at home,
yeah.
I'm sure. We already are doing lots of it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Good luck. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Greg Klein, our guest this afternoon. This is the afternoon in the month, the third Thursday of the month, that we take up the topic of computers. If you've got a question about computers, today's the day to give us a call. Talk to Greg. The numbers to call if you'd like to talk with Greg Klein, 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. No one is waiting at the moment, so if you've got a pressing computer question, you might want to give us a call right now. Greg, Google's been pretty busy of late. You want to bring us up to date on...
Boy, they are, and it seems like if you turn around every other day, they're doing something different. I wanted to say this real quickly. If that gentleman who called about the software, the reading software, is listening, if he goes to www.disability.uiuc.edu or get someone to help him, that there's information there for the campus disability office. And I know from stories I've done in the past that they not only, of course, handle this for the university, but do a lot of research on what's good, what's not, that kind of thing. And they'd probably be able to make some good suggestions to him for what kind of reader software he might want to look at.
Okay. And what's the site again?
It's www.disability.uiuc.edu.
Okay. Very good. disability.uiuc.edu with the www at the front. Okay, now Google.
Well, we've got Google doing a variety of things. One I think is interesting is you can make a personal homepage now at Google. So you go to Google, and if you look up in the right-hand corner, there's a link that says personalized homepage, and you can go there. And essentially what you do is you set up a Google page that has – you can drag and drop all kinds of different elements onto it. I'm looking at mine now, for example, that I made the other day in about, 15, 20 minutes. And I've got a pane that lets me look at my email in my Google Mail account. And I've got some bookmarks in here that are mine, and I've got the weather for Champaign-Urbana, and I've got a word of a day and a quote of the day. And I've got stories, five from each source, from Google News, the New York Times, the BBC, from a couple of tech sites, CNET and Slashdot, and a couple of sports sites, ESPN and Sports Illustrated. It's like my own, and I hesitate to say this, being in the business, it's like my own little newspaper that I put together myself through this tool, easy-to-use tool that Google has made available. So if anybody's interested in that, I encourage them to take a look at it. It's really kind of a fascinating thing. It's a little glitchy because it's it's what they call a beta, which means it's not finished entirely yet. And adding, if you want to add some of your own content, it's a little more tricky than the content they already have there for you to drag onto the page. But it's a pretty good job at this point, and a little scary for a guy in the newspaper business.
Yeah, I think wasn't I reading in the New York Times? I just sort of kind of came across it, and I thought I've got to get back to this article later. But somebody's put together, maybe I actually managed to print it out here this morning, all the news you can use and more. And this is this has got to be something that newspapers are, newspapers like the News Gazette or the New York Times. There's this site, inform.com, that has, and I did take a quick glance at it, but I haven't really had time to read the article or really take a look at the website. But it is amazing, isn't it?
Right. And I think, as I recall, that you can do the same kind of thing at that site and kind of tailor the things you
want to see.
What struck me about the Google thing, and there are others that allow you to do that, Yahoo as well. But I'd never seen anything so easy to do and so intuitive. It's just basically here's a list of choices and you drag them over and can move them around any way you want on the page and organize them as you like, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I was pretty amazed by that. Yeah. Google's got a couple of other things going. One is, if you're familiar with RSS, which variously stands for really simple syndication and other things, depending on who you're talking to. They're little digests of what's new on various websites. And you can get them sent to you in a way that, you know, they're pushed to you. You don't have to go out and see what's new on that website when there's new content. A digest of it comes to you, and if there's something there, you know, a truncated version, if there's something there that you're interested in, you can click on it and you can go right to it. Well, Google is doing something like that too. Again, it's in a beta phase, and they've added a chat client for those people who like to use like AOL Instant Messaging and MSN Instant Messaging. Google is now in the instant messaging business itself, and might eventually unify that whole thing so that there's not, you know, a variety of standards that may or may not talk to each other, which would be, I'm sure, welcome to a lot of people who use instant messaging heavily.
We've got some more listeners ready to talk with us, so let's go next to a listener on line 4, the toll-free line. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Lafayette, Indiana, and I was trying to get Linux running on a couple of machines, and I got what I think should be a well-checked-out version, and I put it on two machines, both having a Pentium 2 chips CPU. One is an Intel PCI chipset, the other one uses an Apollo Pro chipset. Both run Windows 98 as well as I might expect anything to run Windows 98. Both run a diagnostic program test pro just perfectly. But when I get to Linux, I have trouble. X Windows seems to have strange, inconsistent responses to my mouse clicks, cups, sprints, things half-width on the page. And I'm wondering if you have any insights as to what's going on or how one could go about preventing this problem in the future.
Well, what distributions are you trying?
What I had is Mandrake 8.0.
Uh-huh. And that's it?
Yeah.
I thought you said you had two. You must have tried.
No, I had two different computers.
Two different computers. Did you check, Mandrake's online documentation to see if they have a hardware compatibility list up there?
They did, and both of these machines seem to pass it as well as I could see.
And is it? Does it just seem to be the mouse that's the problem?
No, like I say, Cups was printing things. That's the print manager was printing things as a half-width page, and there seemed to be nothing I could do about it. But the mouse clicks were the maybe probably the most serious problem. Although both are serious, that sometimes the mouse click would perform properly, and sometimes it would do something totally inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. Did you try, I take it that I have not used Mandrake before. I use a version of Red Hat, but I'm sure they must have, a system configuration tool in Mandrake as they do in Red Hat. Did you try going into that and, you know, adjusting your mouse settings?
I really didn't try adjusting any mouse settings. I'm sure that there are, you know, contact balance tolerances or something like that to deal with. But
yeah, there are probably all kinds. I know in the Red Hat tool, there you can do a fantastic amount of things with the way your mouse works. And you might if you can find that tool, you might try just making some adjustments to see if that cleans up the problem.
Well, I might play with that. But this seemed like a more fundamental problem. And you mentioned this about system compatibility, which they do indeed have a list. And I wonder, could you give me some background as to this system compatibility issue? I'm thinking that if I was to go out and buy some more hardware specifically for the purpose of running Linux, I want it to work right the next time.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, really, it's if you boil it down to the simplest answer, it's this, okay? You have a piece of hardware, it's hooked to your computer, right? Whether it's a video card or a mouse or a printer, whatever, right?
Yeah.
That piece of hardware needs a little piece of software called a driver.
Right.
To make it work with your computer. And, you know, that's when it had been up really until Windows 95 started to solve the problem, and it's pretty good in Windows XP. That had been a problem with Windows. You never knew, you know, whether your drivers were going to be compatible with the operating system and the various devices you had in your computer. Well, Microsoft's solution to that was to include just an incredible number of drivers in Windows XP, so it's literally compatible with almost anything, right?
Well,
when the problem is with Linux distributions that you're not necessarily going to get that, right? Because even Red Hat not so much, but even commercial Linux distributions are you know, run on a shoestring more or less, right?
True.
So they're not necessarily going to have include everything that you need. So when you're installing in the first place, you want to make sure, you know, you really want to go through what hardware is in the machine you've got. If you used Windows 98 and you used a system information tool in it, you know, you'd kind of want to jot down all the what all the devices were, who made your CD drive, who made your video card, whose mouse is it, whose printer, that kind of thing, and check those against the hardware compatibility list of the distribution you're using. And that's the way to be, safest in getting things to work. Now, that said, even if you go through all of that, you may have problems, because that's why I think, although there are people who are going to call in and scream at me probably, but that's why Linux is not ready for prime time, okay? That's why I don't think that it's something really that the average user wants to mess around with at this point.
Well,
it's gotten better, gets better all the time.
I don't know why there can be so much compatibility problem. For example, I had a couple of boot managers that I was using, and they would respond differently on the different machines. Neither one would respond adequately on both machines.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally went back to it, another one, but it just seems like there was improper response to the keystrokes. Now, reading the keyboard seems like a very easy thing to do. It's really strange to me that there are so many compatibility problems.
Well, all I can say is it goes back to that the situation that it doesn't matter. You know, you're right. In most cases, a keyboard is a keyboard. But still, you know, one keyboard can be different from another. And if you don't have a driver that's compatible with it, you may have problems like that.
Okay, I think you've answered as much as you can on this.
Are you dual booting?
More than dual. I've got several different systems.
Well, you're playing wild and woolly there. I'll tell you, the best luck I've had with Linux is running Linux alone on a machine. So,
well,
your mileage may vary.
I thought that it was straightforward. I mean, sometimes some program will try to rewrite the boot sector, and you have to reinstall it. But so the MBR is something that some programs like to play with without telling you. But if you get over that problem, I didn't think there was any particular problem with multi-systems.
Right. As I said, I know a lot of people that run multiple systems and do just fine. I'm just telling you what my experience has been. So, and, you know, if everything was, if everything in Linux tended to work hunky-dory right out of the box, Microsoft and Apple would be out of business.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but...
Well, it's free, so...
People will claim about this fantastic reliability of Linux. You know, it works like it's supposed to, and that's one attraction I had. The other attraction, of course, was that ultimately you should be able to get adequate documentation, and you have compilers and things that come with it, so you should be able to do your own programming once you get enough information together.
Right.
That was, those two things are the reason I was interested in it.
Well, I think there's, once you get it up and running, I think it's absolutely true that it just does what it's supposed to, okay? It's the getting it up and running that can be the trick, and then if you have a problem, it's the troubleshooting it. That can be a trick.
Okay.
But it's rock solid when it's up and running. It is that's true. It's rock solid.
Okay. Thanks for the call. And I want to thank a listener who called in off the air who has a little bit more information for the visually impaired gentleman who talked with us. They have there's a helpline that you can call for visually impaired folks. The helpline number is area code 217, and the number is 244 770-244-5870, the area code 217. That could be a big help.
Yes.
As he doesn't have a computer
yeah.
yet. Okay. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line one. Hi. Line one?
Yes.
Hi. Go ahead.
Yeah. Last night, we had a storm, and I unplugged my computer, but I forgot to unplug the phone line. And this morning when I went to reboot it, my monitor came on, but the tower wouldn't. And I was wondering if it probably fried my computer.
It's possible. And you had a lightning storm?
Yeah.
Where are you, ma'am?
Oklahoma.
In Oklahoma?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yes, it is possible that something like that happened because you're still wired in, right?
Yeah.
And those wires can still carry electrical surges into your computer.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might want to have somebody check it out from that perspective.
Okay.
And then in the future, let me say this. I always tell people this, get a good surge protector.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the one that costs $10. It's the one that probably costs around $50.
Oh, yeah.
And those usually have places, ports, where you plug in your phone line, right?
Yeah.
So your phone line is also surge protected as well as your electrical line.
Oh, okay.
And so that's a good practice. And then you did what you were supposed to do. You turned your computer off when the storm came.
Yeah.
But that doesn't give you absolute protection. And if it's a big storm, and you're prone to problems like this, it's not a bad idea to unplug it entirely, both the computer and the phone line.
Yeah. I unplugged the computer, just forgot to unplug the phone line.
Yeah. But that's probably what happened, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Oklahoma, how about that? This morning, somebody called in with a pledge of financial support for the agricultural service here at AM 580, and they were calling from Alabama.
Wow.
Yeah, the internet. It's a cool thing. Okay, let's talk with another listener. Line two, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a slight problem in that my mouse doesn't seem to make a response every now and then. It'll work fine, and then all of a sudden, nothing. If I wait 30 seconds or so, it works again.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I noticed this has been about the last month, the clock on the computer is losing time.
Mm-hmm.
I tried putting a new battery in the computer,
mm-hmm.
but that didn't seem to help it.
Hmm. What kind of computer is it, ma'am?
It's about 5 years old. It's a Dell Dimension, and it's running Windows ME.
Windows ME. Well, that's mysterious to me because you did what, as far as the time thing goes, you did what I would have suggested, which is, you know, you have a battery that stores the time in between
right.
when your computer's off, and by replacing the battery, you should have taken care of that time problem. But it's still, you turn it on and the time's off, right?
When I turn it on now, the time is correct.
Oh.
But as I leave it on during the day, it loses time.
How much?
It can be a half hour during the course of a day.
Hmm. Well, I tend to think that that's, you know, Windows ME was kind of a glitchy system, and as I recall, mm-hmm. there was a problem of that sort with it, and I tend to think that that may be what you're seeing there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do you think it's related to the mouse?
No, I don't think it's related to the mouse.
Unresponsiveness?
No. No, I think they're probably two separate problems.
Ah.
Now, you know, you could be having a hardware problem with your mouse, but I don't think that's probably the case either. I think what you're seeing, how often does this happen?
Oh, it's every time I use the computer now, and it'll work fine for 3 or 4 minutes, and then it'll go this freeze-up mode for 30 seconds, and then it'll work fine for 3 or 4 minutes.
Well, what I'm suspecting in this case is that you know, you have things happening on your computer that are dominating its attention.
Yes.
In the background, and that's what's keeping your mouse from responding like it should, right?
Mm.
And you may, in fact, have, you know, virus-like or spyware-like bad things happening in the background on your computer that are dominating its attention.
Well, yeah, I thought of that, except that I run my Norton every few days, and it says I'm virus-free, and I have the free LavaSoft stuff, and I use that every few days.
Yeah, AdAware.
AdAware.
Right, mm-hmm. And they're showing you clean.
Yes.
As good as it is, I always suggest that people use a couple of anti-spyware programs.
Uh-huh.
One is AdAware, and the other is SpyBot Search and Destroy.
Okay.
So you might want to type that into Google, go out and get that, and try running it and see what you see.
Okay.
All right? And then if you hit Control and Alt and Delete, right?
Yeah.
You should be able to get into the Windows Task Manager there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll want to take a look at all the things that are running when you start your computer, okay?
Okay.
Now, some of it will be Windows stuff that you won't necessarily recognize, and some of it will be programs that you want to start. But I suspect there'll be a number of things in there that you don't want running, and they're probably eating up your system resources.
Mm-hmm.
And you may need to get somebody to help you with this, but you want to see identify those and get them turned off.
Mm-hmm. Who would I go to for help with that?
Well, and I'm not really in the business of suggesting these people, but there are a couple people I know of in town.
Uh-huh.
If you look in the phone book under computers in the back there, they come and they'll come and work on and take a look at your computer at home.
So they actually make house calls.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
The other thing I'll say is, as I've said to other people who've called in before, is that Windows ME is bad. It was a bad version of Windows. And it sounds like her computer is new enough that she would be. If you're capable of updating to Windows XP, you know, I suggest that you do that. You'll save yourself a lot of headaches.
I think you and I once discussed this a little bit. It seems that the Millennium bug was really just limited to
Windows
to
ME.
ME. Let's talk with another listener before we run out of time. Caller on line 3. Good afternoon.
I like to listen to archived programs of yours sometimes when I have missed them. And sometime this summer, I'm running I have a desktop with Windows XP. I have Real Player, which is what I use to listen. And at some point this summer, I have been unable to get the programs. I can get to the home page, and when I click on the Real Audio line, which is right next to one that says MP download, some little box flashes so quickly I can't read it. It's about the same amount of time on the screen as it takes to click the mouse. It's a gray box with a blue line across the top. It's probably telling me something. I can't tell what, but I cannot get to listen to the programs anymore.
Hmm.
You're listening to these as streams, right? Or do you get a little file that comes down to your computer?
I don't know.
All right.
Well, I know that it's a little box for Real Player, and you can see the line go across, the little box go across as it plays, almost like a tape recorder.
Mm-hmm. So does Real Player even start when you're clicking on there?
No.
It sounds like you might have a problem with your Real Player installation. You might try reinstalling that.
How do I do that?
Well, did you download it originally?
I must have.
Well, if you go to Real's site, you can you know, it's easy to download it. They make it readily available.
Okay.
So just go there and download it again and reinstall it. That's what I'd do.
Do you have to unload it first somehow, or?
I don't think that'd be necessary in this case.
It replaces what's there?
Yeah, it'd replace or repair what's there, I think.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And are those in MP3 files also?
Yes.
Those archives?
Yes, they are.
So you might...
Brighton.
Yeah.
Jack Brighton. I think he's on his way in.
If they're MP3 files, you might, you might try the MP3 route too, as opposed to Reel.
Yeah. And I think, doesn't Reel, here he is. We've got a question for you, Jack. Reel Player, from time to time, do they do updates?
Yeah, they do.
Yes.
And I heard the question, and it sounds like, I think Greg's answer was good in the sense that there's something gone wrong there with Reel Player. So you could try uninstalling it and reinstalling it, and that, I would hope, would fix the problem. Now, I didn't hear if it's a Mac or a PC. Was it a...
I think it was a XP PC.
Okay, well, that shouldn't be any problem at all. So I would try reinstalling Reel Player and see if that fixes it.
Okay, that's pretty easy to do.
Yeah, you just go to your control panel, add and remove programs. First, I would uninstall Reel Player. I would do that before trying to reinstall it. So go to your control panel, add and remove programs, uninstall Reel Player. Then go to the Reel site and download a new free player. Don't get the paid player because they try to sell you all this stuff. Keep looking for the free version. Download that and reinstall it. That would be my suggestion.
And I told her I didn't think she needed to uninstall it first, but
Jack
is probably right, and is the cautious approach is to uninstall it first and then reinstall it, because then you get a brand new clean install.
Right. So. Yeah. There might be something in the registry or whatever that would cause a problem.
Okay. There you have it, the real deal. Well, this is the Afternoon Magazine, and we've been talking about computers this afternoon here on the program. It's a topic we take up on the third Thursday of the month here on the Afternoon Magazine. And Greg Klein of the News Gazette has been our guest, and he'll be back in December,
yes.
Believe it or not. Wow, okay.
Maybe we can talk about buying a computer for Christmas.
There
we
you
can
go.
Talk about buying us a video iPod.
Yeah.
That would be pretty cool.
We didn't get a chance to talk about that today.
Yeah,
That's
we'll be talking
cool.
more about that later for
yeah.
sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Greg, if you want to escape, you're more than welcome to. Jack Brighton is going to stay with me in the studio here, and Martha Deal is in Pledge Central. And we got a call this afternoon, Jack, when Greg was here from Oklahoma.
See, the internet makes all this possible. We get calls from California and all over the place on Focus 580 and Media Matters and so forth.
And
people listening
magazine.
Online. Yeah.
California?
Yeah, we know that a lot of people are listening online, either to the Reel Audio stream. We also have a Windows media stream and now a QuickTime live stream for AM. So all these ways that people can get us on the internet. And then, of course, we also archive everything on the site so people can listen to it on demand anytime they want. They can even load it in their iPods and so forth through the podcasts and so forth. And I think this just gives people more ways to get at what we try to do. Our mission is to serve you with good interviews and information and cultural programming and so forth. So, I think
it's a public service.
Exactly. Technology makes it better.
Yep. And there's no subscription fee. However...
We want you to call to support it because this is the time of year when we really need to hear from you. 244-9455, that's our pledge line, and we want you to use that right now because, as Celeste said, this is a free public service. We do this because it's our mission. It's important. Somebody's got to. But somebody's got to pay the bills, darn it. So we need you to help us with that, and this is your call to make a call to us, the pledge line, 244-9455, and volunteers are waiting, so give it a ring.
If you're at your computer also.
Right. You can go to willpledge.org. That's a new address we set up to make it easier for us to say on the air and for you to remember. Willpledge.org takes you to our secure web page that has a pledge form right there. You can make a credit card contribution and other ways that you can contribute to WILL.
Okay, very good. WillPledge.org or on the telephone 244-WILL, the area code 217. And anyone joining us this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine and calling up with a contribution, the folks at Jupiter's Pizza are giving us some gift certificates, and we will send them on to you. We'll mail you a $10 gift certificate courtesy of Jupiter's Pizza in downtown Champaign. Jupiter's wants to encourage our listeners to support news and talk radio with this incentive. So if you haven't made a pledge to WILL Radio this week, today's the day. 217-244-9455. Make your pledge now. Enjoy some pizza and some peace of mind, and you can sit back and enjoy AM 580 throughout the year. Basic membership pledge, $40. 244-9455, the number to call.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the Afternoon Magazine, and now what we're going to do is bring you up to date on what happened today on the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Les, from the Chicago Board of Trade this afternoon. The trade said to be very quiet, though the beans were down 4 cents. They did that, I think, early in the morning. Trade stayed there most of the day. The wheat finished the day 4 higher, and the corn was up about a penny for the day. Now the numbers incomplete. December futures at 333 and a quarter, the high, the low at 326 and a quarter. Settlement price at 332 and a quarter for December wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 4.5 cents higher on the end of the day. The March up 5 cents, 348 the high, the low at 340 and a half. A settlement price there, 346 and three quarters, and they were up a nickel for the day. May futures, 354 and three quarters the high, the low at 349 and a half. Settlement price at 354 and a half. They were up 4.5 in July contract, 361 and a quarter the high, the low at 354 and a half. Settlement price at $3.60 and three quarters of a cent. They were up 4.5 for the day. September futures, 367 and a quarter, the high at 362 and a half. That's the low, rather. And the settlement price at 367 and a quarter, up on that high, 4.5 cents higher for the next year's September wheat contract. December corn at the Chicago Board of Trade finished a penny higher on the day, with a high of 203, low at 201 and a quarter, settled at 202 and three quarters. They were up 1 cent. March futures, 215 and three quarters the high, the low at 214. Settlement price at 215 and a half, up one. And the May corn, 224 the high, the low at $2.22. Settled at 223 and three quarters, up one and a quarter. July contract at 231 high, low at 229 and a quarter. Their settlement price at 230 and three quarters, up a penny for the day. And September corn, 238 and a quarter for the high, the low at 237 and a quarter. Settlement price at $2.38 for the September contract of 2006, up a half cent. Next year's December contract up a half as well. 248 and a quarter the high, the low at 47. A settlement price for next year's December corn, $2.47 and three quarter cents. They were up one half of the day. December oats, 166 and a half the high, the low at 162 and a half. A settlement price there at $1.66. They were up 3 3/4 in the March futures, up 3.5 today. 173 and a half the high, the low at 170 and a quarter. Settlement price at 173 and a half. Once again, up 3.5 cents. From the soy complex, now nearby November soybeans down 4 1/4 cents for the day. A 586 and a half high, low at 582 and a half. Their settlement price at $5.85. And they were down 4 1/4. January futures, 598 and a half the high, the low at 595. Settlement price at $5.98, down 3 3/4. And the March soybeans, 607 the high, the low at 603. Settlement price up 606 and a quarter at 3 1/4. May futures in the bean pit, 612 the high for the day, the low at 608. Settled at 611. They were down 3 3/4 in July futures. A 617 high, low at 613. Settled at $6.16 and a quarter cents. They were up three and rather down 3 1/4 for the day for the July soybeans. And the August futures were off 4 cents at 6.16 and a half. Their high 6.17 and a half. The low at 14 and a half. Settled on that low at $6.14 and a half cents. Bean meal futures for the day. The December contract down 31.72. The high, the low at 170.20. Settled at 171.90. They were off 30. And the January meal, 173.70. The high, the low at 172.10. Settled at 173.60. They were down 40 for the day. December bean oil, 24.22. The high, the low at 23.85. Settled at 23.98. Down 33. And the January bean oil, 24.40. The high, the low at 24.12. Settlement price at 24.26. And they were off 32 for the day. Coming up during the closing market report today, as we always do on Thursday, we'll talk with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services. He's out of Bloomington, Illinois. Take a complete look at the futures market, the cash grain market on Thursdays now, handled by Bill Mayer at Roach Ag Marketing. He's in Lexington, Illinois. Of course, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. Take a quick look at the agricultural news and get the agricultural weather from Peter Levitt. Between then and now, the agricultural audience needs to step up to the phone. Yes, they do. 217-244-9455 is the number to call and pledge your financial support to the station that has made a commitment to the rural community across the two-state region, Illinois, Indiana. And if you happen to listen outside of that region on the live web streams, please pick up the phone now and dial 217-244-9455 with your pledge of financial support to this radio station. It's important to get things started right now. We're trying to meet some goals for the day, including a goal that has been put forth by Agricold. We hope to have that all wrapped up by the end of this afternoon on our way to 60 and then possibly through 75 callers in support of agricultural programming here at the WILL radio stations. Recapping very quickly what happened to the Chicago Board of Trade, futures in the wheat pit were up 4 to 5 cents, corn futures were up a half to a penny, and soybeans were down 3 to 4 for the day. Now, with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange, here's Celeste Quinn.
Prices on the Merc were lower today, Todd. October feeder cattle, the high 117.60, the low 116.50, the settlement 116.85, that down 80. November 116.60, the high, the low 115.05, the settlement 115.92.5, that down 25. January 114.20, the high 112.75, the low, the settlement 113.40, that down 65. October live cattle 90.20, the high 88.85, the low, the settlement 89.25, that down 35. December live cattle 91.20, the high 90.30, the low 90.55, the settlement that off 12.5 cents. December lean hog 60.85, the high 59.82.5, the low 60.22.5, the settlement that down 85. February 63.70, the high 62.82.5, the low finishing at 63.60, down 37.5. April lean hog 64.30, the high 63.40, the low 64 even, the settlement that down 67.5. May lean hog 64.75, the high 64.10, the low 64.72.5, the settlement that down 40. February pork bellies 88.50 was today's high, the low 86.10, finishing at 87.30, that contract down 102.5. The Dow is off 73 points at 10,342. The S&P 500 off 11 at 1185. And the NASDAQ is down 18 points at 2073.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois. Deferred pricing contracts available this fall. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
You're tuned to WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. You'll find us online at WILL.UIUC.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Henry Frayne is our technical director this afternoon. The producer for the afternoon magazine is Harriet Williamson. Coming up, we'll have news from National Public Radio. Then Todd Gleason and Dave Dickey will be in with the closing market report. Ed Kieser's forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon, north and central, cloudy and cool with periods of rain. In the far south, mostly cloudy and warm with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Highs ranging from 52 in some northern and central locations to 80 in far southern Illinois. Tonight in northern Illinois, mostly cloudy with a few